Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
From the lakefront to the riverfront, this is where Wisconsin sports fans come to talk. The Bill Michaels Show, named Best Radio Show in the Wisconsin Broadcasters Awards for Excellence. Now, here's your host, Bill Michaels.
Madness has begun. Louisville down by 10 right now, trying to claw their way back as Minnesota has been on top almost the entire game, 74-64 with 3:56 left to go in the contest. Meanwhile, LSU having their way with Yale. Yale's trying to hang in there, but 53-41, 13:49 left to go in the contest there. Meanwhile, Bruce Pearl and the Auburn Tigers taking on New Mexico State. They have an early 28-19 lead, 4:40 left to go in the first half, and Vermont and Florida State just now getting underway. Bradley, the Braves, led by Brian Wardle, the former Marquette standout, take on Michigan State coming up at 1:45 this afternoon. Belmont and Maryland to follow. Maryland out of the Big Ten, number 6 seed, taking on the 11 seed, the Belmont Bulldogs. Also, Northwestern, the Wildcats, taking on number 4 Kansas later on this afternoon, and the docket goes on from there, including the game that we're all going to be paying attention to, and that is Marquette today at 3:30 taking on the Racers of Murray State. Welcome back to the program. I'm Bill Michaels. Great time of year. Seeing a lot of people out at the bars and the restaurants and enjoying yourself, some terrific bar food. Speaking of good food, our friends over at Cousin Subs want to remind you, hey, if you got stuck in the office, some of these locations now deliver. Check out CousinSubs.com, CousinSubs.com, where they believe in better. I'm recommending the pepperoni melt. Get the big one. Get one for the first half and one for the second half. Get that big one, cut that thing in half, and you are good to go. Extra mayo, extra cheese, and a great fresh-baked Italian bread. That is our friends from Cousin Subs. Side of Radio Joke Cheese Curds, and that's a banner day watching a tournament. That is our friends at Cousin Subs. Cousin Subs, where they believe in better, the official sub sandwich of the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network. Let's call Paul and talk Packers.
Need the latest news and analysis on your green and gold? Well, we better call Paul.
Paul Emig, our green and gold analyst, now joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. And Paul, we talked a little bit about it yesterday. I just saw, I just retweeted about 15 minutes ago, Randall Cobb signing his contract down in Dallas. So, Not the easiest thing to see. I'd said this yesterday. It's disappointing. I think it's just more of a little bit of a deflating day if you're a Packers fan to see some of your fan favorites kind of go by the wayside. But as we talked about yesterday, also, hey, if you're not getting better, then you're staying stagnant, and that's not being a good team, so to speak. So. The Packers have got some holes to fill. They're going to lead on the draft. I don't expect anybody else. Maybe a waiver claim signing or something like that. Guys that get cut during some of the roster cuts. But beyond that, I think this is the team we're going to run with.
Yeah, and I think this happened obviously last year with Jordy Nelson. And I think for the Packers to not re-sign, well, in the case of last year, Jordy Nelson, to cut him, and then a year later to not re-sign Randall Cobb or Clay Matthews, I think is very, very interesting. And, you know, how quickly things change and how Brian Gutekunst comes and takes over this team. And, you know, in terms of feel-good stories and, oh, you know, like, these are the Packers and these are the guys that you think of when you think of the Packers. He's not having any of that sentimental stuff. You know, he'll cut Jordy Nelson, you know, to hell with the way you feel about it. You know, I think that's a really interesting thing to see. And then a year later, he doesn't, you know, they talked with Clay Matthews' agent. Obviously, the price got, in my opinion, out of hand. I, you know, as we talked about, I can't believe Matthews got that much that much money from the Rams. I think Cobb's contract, though, is pretty reasonable. But I think when you see the post, and I'm not sure if you did, if you saw what Aaron Rodgers posted, what David Bakhtiari posted, it's a business, and players know that. And Aaron Rodgers was very, you know, very clear about that in one of his post-game comments this year, where, you know, he said, what was this quote from that one movie? I keep getting older, they keep staying the same age. That's what happens every offseason. And I think players, certainly like Rodgers, who's been doing this now for, what, this is going to be his 15th NFL season, he gets it. David Bakhtiari has only been in the league for 6 years now, but, you know, he gets it. But at the same time, you see the way that these guys post about their teammates leaving. And I think it's, you know, again, they get it, and it's a business, and you're not going to sign it, you know, give a guy $5 million just because he's friends with your quarterback. And, you know, again, if you really – the one of the more fascinating things about social media is when these guys actually go back and forth with each other. So the way that these things unravel is it's like when Rodgers did that post the other day about saying how he already misses his friend in reference to Randall Cobb, I don't know if you saw this on Instagram, Bill, but then, you know, Cobb said something back of like, you know, I'm going to really miss traveling the world with you and Danica. And then Danica Patrick comments back and says, we have our whole lives to do that. And so you can, like, you can be a fly on the wall of these conversations that aren't just between teammates, or in this case, now former teammates, but between, like, where the wives and the girlfriends have come into play, and how, you know, it's more than just, you know, teammate stuff. So, again, you don't give Randall Cobb $5 million because he's friends with your quarterback and because he's going to miss, you know, those partnerships and those travels and everything else, because they can still be friends. you can be friends with people you don't work with. It's not that, it's not like an earth-shattering thought process. But I do think it's an interesting glimpse into the way that Brian Gutekunst is going to run this team. There is no sentimental value. There's no, like, well, you know, like, Rodgers really wants him to be re-signed. Because how many times throughout the years, even with Ted Thompson, did Rodgers say, I really want us to bring back Charles Woodson. We have to re-sign James Jones. We got to do this. We, you know, we have to, you know, you can't cut Jordy Nelson. And, like, the number of times he's mentioned something about a player publicly, I don't remember it once, ever, resulting in that player being brought back or re-signed or, you know, not let go or whatever the case might be. So, yeah, they'll give Rodgers all the money in the world, and they'll make him happy from that perspective. But if they're going to cut Jordy Nelson, if they're going to let Cobb walk, if they're going to let Clay Matthews walk, you know, to heck with the way that, you know, you feel about it emotionally, that's the business decision he made. And I think it's a very interesting way to watch Gutekunst make this team in his own image.
No, that I agree with. And look, there's a lot of people still can't believe for the amount of money that Clay Matthews signed for. Yeah. I still am a little bit flabbergasted by how much money they gave Clay. And we were talking between 3 and 5, maybe bringing him back, and they paid him, you know, 8.5, 9. And I'm still stunned by that. So look, I understand the business side of it in that realm. Randall Cobb, 1 year, $5 million. He's got to prove a deal. He's got to be able to say to the Cowboys and the rest of the league, you know, hey, I got something to give. But I just never saw him fitting in here as a slot receiver, and that's what he was, other than a comeback guy to Aaron Rodgers. Geronimo Allison can fill that bill. Hell, you've got Equanimeous St. Brown, who I think is more suited to be a slot receiver than really anybody on this team right now. They've got guys to fill that. So that's why I thought the more likely candidate to come back would have been Clay Matthews, but not for the money he signed for. There's no way I'm bringing him back.
Right, not at that money. Yeah, I mean, to your next point about Cobb and the slot and everything, and I think that's what, I mean, the Packers, there was a very clear draft strategy last year when they selected 3 wide receivers, you know, with Jamon Moore and Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Equanimeous St. Brown. They drafted big, athletic dudes, you know, pretty much the complete contrast in size and stature to Randall Cobb, you know, who is more of your traditional, smaller, quick, you know, quick laterally slot receiver. And I think that is where, like, you know, when you say something like, well, you know, I think Equanimeous St. Brown, Bill, you just said, you know, you could see him being more of a slot receiver. In traditional NFL sense, like, that sounds kind of crazy, right? Because of how big he is. But I think that's where the NFL is moving towards, is like, you can have your Randall Cobbs and your Tavon Austins and your Cole Beasleys and guys like this, but they have a more specialized role in the grand scheme of route running and in the grand scheme of offensive usage because you can really only use them in one spot. Whereas, you know, if there was a case to be made for the Packers to not let Jordy Nelson go a year ago, or to even maybe bring him back this year, it's that Nelson, in his last year in Green Bay, was really effective out of the slot. Now, he's, 6'3", as opposed to Cobb at 5'10".
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean just because you're a bigger, taller, stronger guy that you can't play the slot, especially in today's NFL, because what's the point? You want to create mismatches. Mismatches can be with speed, because, you know, you put Cobb on a traditional inside linebacker, especially in Cobb's prime, and he's going to be way too fast for him. But you can also create mismatches with size. And I think one of the things we found out about the type of, you know, front office GM that Gutekunst is, we found out last year during the draft, is he wants big, athletic, just like mismatch creating wide receivers in terms of their size. To draft three of them, clearly he didn't think all three of them would be, you know, outside wide receivers. So he must have thought, well, one of these guys could eventually learn to play the slot well. And so again, I think I think we learn more and more. Every draft, every free agency will continue to learn more about the way Gutekunst and his front office staff looks at this, because he has a very different, I mean, it's only been a couple off seasons, really an off season and a half of having Gutekunst at GM. And I think we're already finding out how much differently he views roster building than what Ted Thompson did.
Who's been clearly, going back to free agency, and everybody wants to rate everything. Who's been kind of the winner in free agency this offseason? Because I know the Packers, for what they've done, if you listen to people in Chicago, they're saying, well, they got the most out of their safety position. They got the most out of their corner position. They got the most out of their pass rushers. They're happy with Ha Ha Clinton Dix. And I'm thinking to myself, are you kidding me? Andre Damos? I think he's an upgrade back there for what the Packers needed to do. So I'm kind of thinking to myself, who won this offseason besides the Cleveland Browns?
I was going to say, if you're going to exclude the Browns, who are constantly making
the Raiders
making moves and making noise. No, I mean,
they signed crazy.
Vontaze Burfict on top of Antonio Brown.
Right?
Listen, John Gruden is a dominating personality, which is both for better and for worse. But, you know, I think people believe he can keep guys in line because he himself is such a character. Bill, I would say that any team that signs Clinton Dix did not win the offseason. So that's not
right.
I think the Vikings, having been able to retain Anthony Barr when it seemed like he was going to be a New York Jet, I think is a really big deal for the Vikings, which is obviously unfortunate for the Packers and unfortunate for Rodgers, because, of course, Barr is, you know, infamous for his hit on Rodgers that broke the collarbone in 2016 or 2017. The Baltimore Ravens had an interesting offseason. Obviously, they shed some guys that you think of as being Ravens, including, of course, their quarterback. But then they go and do Earl Thomas and they do Mark Ingram. I think that's interesting. I don't know how you can look at the money that the Jets gave to Le'Veon Bell, which really wasn't that much money. I mean, the Packers gave more money to Za'Darius Smith than what Le'Veon Bell got with the Jets. So I think, you know, I'm curious to see how that works out if you tag team him with Sam Darnold. Any obvious winners, though, Bill? The Saints for retaining Teddy Bridgewater, I think, is a really big deal in the long scope of replacing Drew Brees. I think that's really interesting. Who else comes to mind for you in terms of like big moves that you thought?
The only team that I think won clearly was Cleveland.
I agree.
That's the one team I think got extremely better. I think Minnesota didn't lose a ton, and like I agree with you, keeping Anthony Barr was probably the best thing they could have done to keep that defense intact. I like what the Packers did in filling holes with veterans, guys that have been there, done that, versus relying on guys that haven't. So while the moves aren't big, I think at least the experience is going to benefit that team and for what Mike Pettine can do. It's either going to be an all-in and things are really going to begin to take off with the attitude out in Oakland, or that is going to become a complete ego-driven train wreck. And that thing's going to just drive itself off the ground and right into the ditch, and it's going to sink slowly into the abyss. One of the two. So,
and the Raiders do come to Lambeau this year, if I recall correctly.
I know.
And I mean, the schedule's not out. We don't know when, but I know that they are one of the home opponents for the Packers. So, depending on if that's late in the year or early in the year, we get to see how much of that sideshow, if it's working or if it's not working. And I think if it's anything like the Raiders' 2018 season, which clearly didn't work, it'll be fascinating to see if that, like you said, if that, you know, goes down in great infamy of a terrible John Gruden run, or if somehow he can corral all of that personality down there.
Always good, Paul. We'll talk soon, okay?
All right,
pal.
So.
Talk to you later. There you go. Paul Emig, our green and gold analyst, joining us for a couple of minutes on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Schneider hiring drivers right now. You work hard. They treat you fair. 80-plus years they've been getting it done. Call them, 844-PRIDE, or go to schneiderjobs.com. Brewers breaking news. If you haven't heard already, we'll get into that discussion. It's not good. And in addition to that, you've got some injuries regarding the Bucks. We'll talk about that. We'll get you caught up as the madness has begun. All of that next to the Bill Michaels Show.
You're listening to the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Welcome back to the program. We are glad to have you. Bill Michaels' show continues on.
I was having a really good off-air conversation with Paul.
Yeah.
Just talking about the Brewers.
Yep.
And this whole bullpen thing. Let's say they don't get Kimbrel. Who's the closer? Is it Hader?
If put it this way, if it is, and he would be your most likely candidate. If it's Hader, first of all, I think they would go to closer by committee. Just my opinion. I think that they would use Hader in situations that would be beneficial, such as an inning or two. But you can't eliminate his ability to close every night by using him in multiple innings, which is, I know, a temptation for them to do so. So
well, they won't do that.
They don't want to do that. So,
I mean, if you get to the eighth inning, yeah, you could have Hader close it out, get the final six outs, but then you're probably not going to be able to use him the next night.
Jacob Barnes. Jacob Barnes becomes another guy you probably put into that position.
I'd almost go with Taylor Williams and Taylor Williams.
He could end up being your setup guy in the eighth inning. You know, Jimmy Nelson. It becomes your setup guy, and then Hader becomes your closer. If you can do that, and Jimmy Nelson can throw a couple of innings.
That's under the assumption that Jimmy Nelson's going to be fine.
Yeah, that he'll be good. Now, he's obviously thrown in the upper 90s, and he's looking for better control, so we'll see what happens with Jimmy. But, it would probably be, Jimmy Nelson, Taylor Williams, your, seventh and eighth guys. Josh Hader throwing an inning or Jacob Barnes throwing an inning, and those would become your closers. I mean, that's the way it would kind of work. You'd have to just kind of fit yourself into a rhythm, I guess. The worst part about it is, let's just say that, and I'm pretty comfortable with what they chose today, in case you're just tuning us in, Yoelis Chacin is going to be your opening day starter. Zach Davies was told he'll be pitching on the fifth day against Cincinnati, which puts in Corbin Burns, Freddie Peralta, and Brandon Woodruff. That's your starting five now. So that's going to make sure that if you have any of those guys falter, your long relief guy now is Chase Anderson, who's not thrown well. Matt Albers is a middle relief guy. Junior Guerra becomes a middle relief guy.
Junior Guerra is someone to keep an eye on because ever since he settled into the bullpen, he's been pretty effective. That might be someone that they could rely heavily on.
Before Matt Albers ended up getting hurt last year, he actually threw really well.
Yeah, so, Matt Albers was impressive the first, 3 months?
Yeah.
And then
he was injured, and then he just never really kind of found that go-to again. So he could be a guy that if he comes back to that form, he could end up being a stellar anchor in your pen if he's able to find that all over.
But I'm not willing. There are a few guys I would be trying before Matt Albers. Like, Matt Albers just needs to go out and get work in before I feel comfortable at all to put him in the seventh, eighth, or ninth. Like, I'd rather have
He's middle relief.
Right. I'd rather have Taylor Williams or Junior Guerra well before we try out Matt Albers.
Right. No, I completely agree with that.
And the thing is, too, Bill, and maybe we can talk about this tomorrow and, get some of the listeners' thoughts on this. But, if we're talking about who has more pressure, the starting rotation or the offense, to kind of make up for what they might lose in the bullpen, I'm saying it's the offense because the offense is stacked 1-8. Those guys are going to have to score runs. They can't be having these drops like they did last year. The pitching staff bailed them out for the first half of the year last year.
They're going to have to average 4.5 runs a game.
They're going to have to.
If they don't get Kimbrell and they lose Corey Knebel, and in case you're just tuning us in, Corey Knebel is now being seen by Dr. William Roche as he has elbow problems that are, at least according to Craig Counsell, serious. So now we'll wait and see. And they're concerning, I guess is the best way to put it. I shouldn't say serious, but concerning. And then obviously you have Jeremy Jeffress, who's going to throw a bullpen today. And if he's not hitting 90-plus mile an hour later today, then you've got him with the shoulder weakness, and you're really thin on the back end of that bullpen. By the way, we were down in spring training and looking forward to opening day, and it's all brought to you by our friends at Coach's Pub and Grill with Cornet right now at the end of the bar as they have March Madness on all the TVs at Coach's. I just got a wind of Steve, who is one of our listeners, went in there and picked up the Big Boy Burger for lunch today, watching some of the tournament. Enjoy your friends down at Coach's Pub and Grill, South 13th Street in Milwaukee. Also, if you're out and about and you need a ride home, do it in style. Check out Pat and Brooke and everybody out at Signature Limo. Go to booksignature.com. That is booksignature.com, where they're small enough to know your name, big enough to handle your every need. That is our friends over at booksignature.com. And our friends at Usinger. Usinger, boy, I tell you what, tailgate season right around the corner, right? A week from today, opening day, we're going to be out at Healthfare Field in the Miller Park. Parking lots are going to be open, and you're going to smell it. It's going to be great. It's supposed to be about 60 degrees. Should be a perfect day for opening day. Make sure it's a Usinger kind of day. Go to Usinger, U-S-I-N-G-E-R, Usinger.com, and see all that they have to offer. Yeah, it's if you're just tuning us in, it's a concerning day. You've got injuries with the Milwaukee Bucks. You've got injuries with the Milwaukee Brewers now. The Bucks obviously streaking towards the postseason. The Brewers trying to replicate and duplicate and take it a step further for what they did last year. And that bullpen was stellar. I don't know how else to put it. I mean, they were stellar. So you can't win the division and win the National League in April, but you can certainly lose it in April, and you want to get off to at least a quick start. And so the Brewers right now down a couple of pitchers, three pitchers actually. You're counting on Jimmy Nelson. You were counting on Corey Knebel, and you were counting on Jeremy Jeffress, all of which right now are questionable. We know that Nelson and Jeffress are not going to start the season on the opening day roster. And now the news about Corey Knebel coming out with an elbow issue, and he has to go see the doc, and they say they are concerned. That's just not good, which pushes up the discussions regarding Kimbrel, one of the better closers in all of baseball. And like you said, Joe, now he's kind of sitting in the catbird seat, knowing that if it's bad news, the Brewers are kind of in a desperate situation. He can up his value. Also, don't forget the Brewers not only have to pay him, but if they sign him before June 1st, they got to give up a draft choice as well. So that's another decision that goes into this thing, as much as the Brewers value draft choice.
See, my thing is with Kimbrel, if you want to pay him, because I mean he wants something ridiculous. If you want to give him like 1 year at $20 million or something, fine, because it's only 1 year.
Right.
If Mark wants to do that and shell out all that money, then by all means do it. I think it's going to be the multi-year contract that the Brewers are going to be a little uneasy to do. So if the Brewers can find a way to pay Kimbrel at least $20 million plus for just 1 year, then do it. Get it done. But I got to think his agent's going to want more than just a year. And the Brewers, they may say it's... I mean, again, the one thing we've known about David Stearns over the last couple of years, he does have a limit when it comes to spending, whether it's money or it's spending prospects. There is a limit. He looks into every little thing. Free agency trades, he is always asking to see what the price is going to be, but he has his limit. What will the limit be with Craig Kimbrel?
855-830-8648. If you want to chime in, feel free to do so. 855-830-8648. Don't forget, coming up tonight, we're going to be 6 to 7 at the Milwaukee Basketball Hour. We're going to be at Major Goolsby's tonight, checking out some March Madness. And our special guest tonight from the Milwaukee Bucks, Eric Bledsoe, is going to be there live and in person. Come on out tonight. That is Major Goolsby's downtown. We're going to be there 6 to 7 tonight for the Milwaukee Basketball Hour. We're going to go ahead and continue. Coming up next to the Bill Michaels Show.
Border to border, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
I want you to kill every golfer on the course.
Check me if I'm wrong, Sandy, but if I kill all the golfers, they're going to lock me up and throw away the key.
Golf! gophers! The Greek, not gophers! The little brown furry rodents!
We can do that.
Hey!
We don't even have to have a reason.
Do it, man!
All right, let's do the same thing, but with gophers.
Welcome back! Best music in all of sports. It's tournament time. The madness has begun in our first upset. Not a big one, but an upset nonetheless. The number 10 Minnesota Golden Gophers have knocked off the Cardinals of Louisville. By the way, Bill Murray, who you heard in the montage there, his son, who played for Xavier, we remember him when he was in the crowd when the Badgers were taking on Xavier, is now the assistant coach at Minnesota, or excuse me, at Louisville. And so Louisville gets knocked off by Minnesota today. The 10 seed, the Golden Gophers, knocking off the Cardinals, the 7 seed, a little bit earlier today. Now they will face the winner of Bradley and Michigan State, who will play later on today.
So the Gopher beat Bill Murray again.
The Gopher gets the best of Bill Murray.
All right, show yourself, you little varmint.
So in addition to that, okay, you've already got that as a final, 86-76. They knocked him off. You have got 125 left to go in the game, and a big upset in the brewing if indeed Yale can come back by 6. They are down 68-62, but they have been scrapping. They were down by as much as 12 about 5.5 minutes ago, and they have cut the lead to 6. LSU 26-6 in the season, the 3 seed. Yale, the 14 seed. They are trying to hang on and see if they can't get a couple of buckets and put this thing within striking distance with the possession to go. But 68-62, watch that game. That is a big one. In the meantime, 32-29, number 5, Auburn, the Tigers, with Bruce Pearl leading the way right now, 3 points over New Mexico State, the 12 seed. And Vermont and Florida State, with 3:33 left to go in the first half, they are tied at 25, the number 4 seed Florida State, getting all they can handle from Vermont right now. So that's the way things shape up. The next game on the docket that gets underway here in about 5 minutes, the 15 seed Bradley Braves out of Peoria, Illinois, led by Brian Wardle, and all the controversy regarding the banned press coverage, and the number 2 Michigan State Spartans, they get underway coming up here in about 15 minutes, and then after that it's Belmont and Maryland and goes on from there. In the meantime, Jim Polzin of the State Journal talking some Badger basketball joined us a little bit earlier today. And I just talked to him about this matchup between Oregon and the Ducks and the Badgers of Wisconsin.
Yeah, it's really a club that over the last probably 11 games has struggled to score in a variety of ways. Three-point shooting's been around 29 in that stretch. As you mentioned, the free throws have kind of been a consistent struggle for Ethan Happ and some others. You know, it's hard to win if you don't score consistently, and that's kind of the, you know, if you're going to predict a reason why this team could exit early, that'd be the one reason. Now, on the flip side, it's one of the best defenses in the country. They're gritty, play smart for the most part, and so they're always going to be in games. They haven't gotten blown out all year. So, I mean, I think it's going to be another close game, just like almost every other game since January has been for this team.
What does this team have to do, I guess, in your opinion, first of all, I mean, Oregon comes in pretty hot. They're coming out of the Pac-12, and I don't know what that means because the Pac-12 was a little bit down this year, but they come in hot, an 8-game win streak, playing much better. So give me your thoughts as they're taking on this Oregon, who it's not an unfamiliar foe, although, you know, guys from 4 and 5 years ago are not here anymore, so it is an unfamiliar foe in that sense. But Oregon's going to have that place packed because it's out there in San Jose. So give me your thoughts on Oregon.
Yeah, you know, it's a team that came into the year ranked number 14 in the country with a top 5 recruiting class, and one of those kids, Bol Bol, the son of Manute Bol, is no longer with the team. He got hurt and he decided to pack it in and get ready for the NBA draft. He's a probable first-round pick. So I think it took the team a little bit after that to adjust just to a new roster, so many freshmen, grad transfer. I just think it was kind of a deal where the roster wasn't used to one another, and it probably took till February to click. And once they clicked, they really did click. I'm with you. I don't know what to make of their winning streak because of who it's come against. I mean, yes, 4 of those wins came against teams that are in the NCAA tournament, but I don't know how good Washington is. I don't know how good Arizona State is. So, you know, I don't know what to make of that streak. It is a team that, you know, defensively is really good. They have a top 20 defense. They mix up defenses. They play some man. They'll play a lot of 2-3 zone, and they start four guys that are 6'9". So that zone is effective because they have such long pieces to it. So, you know, I'm curious to see how, you know, Wisconsin works against that zone and against those long bodies. And, you know, they need to knock down open shots. That's basically what it comes down to, Bill. They had plenty of open shots against Michigan State last weekend in Chicago and just, frankly, just missed them. So you can't do that in the NCAA tournament or you're going to be done early.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up, that they did miss some open looks. The good news is, I guess, like Greg Gard says, we had open looks. Everything that they did was correct. They just didn't hit their shots. So the length of Oregon, as you had mentioned, we talked about this yesterday, you know, they got four guys sitting at 6'8", 6'9". How is that going to affect and make Wisconsin adjust their shooting?
Yeah, I mean, that's the difficulty, especially you don't know if it's going to be man-to-man or zone. I mean, the zone, traditionally in the past, Wisconsin's been a pretty good team against the zone because they'll put, you know, Ethan Happ in the middle of it, and he'll distribute, and, you know, Wisconsin's been pretty good at movement, pretty good at finding open spots. It's just a smart team in general. So it's against zones, those are the type of teams you want to have, is guys that, you know where to go with the ball, know where to go without the ball, and, you know, you can find some open spots, and then it comes down to knocking it down. If Oregon goes man-to-man, they've got plenty of guys that can match up with Ethan Happ without sending double teams. So then things become a little bit tighter on the three-point line. If you don't have to devote extra bodies to Ethan Happ, as some teams have had to do, then you can kind of crowd that three-point line and make life difficult for, you know, Demetri Trice, who's, you know, I think listed at 6 foot, and Brad Davison is listed at 6'3". Mm-hmm. They're going to have bigger bodies on them. So, you know, I would imagine that finding open shots is going to be difficult against those long bodies.
We know that Ethan Happ is the guy that's, you know, kind of stirs the drink, and he's the most experienced player there. But who else do you rely upon? And, you know, again, going back to the length of this team, it is going to change things the way this team looks at their offense. This team doesn't really play well in transition, but it's almost like you get better looks if you get the ball open in open court in transition rather than trying to set up your offense and try to just find an open look over a guy that's basically a tree in front of you.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how they play. I mean, Khalil Iverson's a guy that's played really, really well of late. So, you know, if Oregon does go to a zone, he's a guy that can, you know, maybe make some backdoor cuts and Happ can find him and you can get some easy buckets that way. Another guy I really think is crucial, and, you know, and the guards are crucial. Let's not, you know, that's an obvious point, that Davison and Trice need, one of them needs to play really well probably for this team to make a run here. And if both of them do, that's even better. But the one guy I think that they really need to play well is Nate Reavers. He's struggled lately from the floor, and he's a guy that can get that shot off against big bodies because he's a big body himself. I think he's going to get some open looks. I think he's going to get some looks from three-point range. I think he's going to get some looks inside and needs to be efficient because, you know, Happ can't do it all. He needs some of the surrounding pieces to do it, and that's just the one guy, Nate Reavers, from a matchup standpoint that I think will be able to at least get decent looks. And, again, you know, I hate to belabor the point, but it comes down to knocking those open looks down.
When you talk about Oregon's seed at the end of their season, when they rattled off those 8 straight wins to get here, do you think Oregon got a good seed or they should have been higher or lower?
Well, that's a great question, because here's the thing. I mean, when you went through the seeds from 1 to 68, they're 48, I believe, which means they're the worst 12th seed, which in some respect makes sense, right? Because if they don't beat Washington in the title game, they're not in the tournament. This was not going to be an at-large team. And it was a team that almost lost in the semifinals to Arizona State. So there was a series of things that needed to happen for them to even get in the tournament. And if any of those things go the other way, this team's playing in the NIT. So I understand they're the worst 12 seed, you know, in terms of just sheer number and analytics. But, you know, on the flip side, they're hot. And right now they're probably playing as well as most 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 seeds. You know, I just think once you get in this tournament, from 4 to 13, or really from 5 to 12, there's not a whole lot of difference on any given day, and it just comes down to who plays well that day. And I'm sure Oregon's feeling great about itself. They came here as a 12 seed. It's the same arena in San Jose. They came here as a 12 seed in, I believe, 2013, and won 2 games to go to the Sweet 16. So there's some familiarity there. There's some history there. I don't know if that matters to players because they weren't around, but Dana Altman can certainly tell them that and give them one more positive boost of, you know, confidence coming in here. So it's going to be a tough task for Wisconsin. And, you know, I'm not saying they're going to lose. I have not made a prediction, and I'm had a hard time ever since this matchup came out, just because I think if Wisconsin does the things that it usually does, take care of the ball, play good defense, if it can just knock down shots, I think Wisconsin will be okay. But there's not a recent history to suggest that that's going to happen either.
If indeed they lose, is there any repercussions for Greg Gard? Is there any thought that might not be good enough? Or is this just, hey, you got back to the tournament, now let's take it the next step next year?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, Barry Alvarez gave him a one-year rollover after a losing season. I think Barry, and I haven't talked to Barry lately, but my feeling is that Barry's pretty confident with the direction of the program. And I told others this too. I think the number one priority this year was getting back to the tournament and kind of reestablishing Wisconsin basketball on the right path. And I think that happened. Now, I don't want to say anything from here on out is gravy, because I do think, you know, depending on how things go and how the way the game plays out tomorrow, is going to tell kind of a lot of the narrative on this season. But, you know, I think number one mission was accomplished this season, and now you got to kind of move on to number two and number three goals.
Let me ask you this. What do you think, okay, regardless of what happens this year, what is then the expectation? Ethan Happ exiting, you get this team a little bit older with guys that are coming in. What is the expectation then next year?
Well, it's a tough question to answer right now because I don't know who's going to be back around the Big Ten. That's a big factor, is how the rest of the league is going to look. And I don't know how Wisconsin's roster is going to look either. You know, I don't know if anybody's going to leave. I don't know if they're going to add a grad transfer. I haven't seen Tyler Wall, the freshman from Minnesota, play against college competition. He's a guy that I think I can help, but until I see it, it's hard to say. That said, Davison, Trice, Reavers are all going to be a year older. I expect Reavers to make a big jump from sophomore to junior year. I think he's going to be a really, really good player, a potential all-Big Ten type player. I expect a guy like Kobe King to make a huge jump at some point here. I don't know when that's going to happen, but you see signs of it, and I think he's going to be a really, really good player too. So, you know, yes, you lose Ethan Happ, and especially he's going to hurt from a rebounding defensive standpoint. You get Micah Potter, who's sitting out this season after transferring from Ohio State. He's going to fill in and be a little bit of a more natural fit in their offense because he can shoot outside. So I'm curious to see this team next year, but, you know, it's hard. It's a hard question to answer because that's so far away. These guys have an entire offseason to mesh and develop, and I believe that will happen. I don't think there's going to be a huge fall-off. If that's the question, I don't think there's going to be a massive drop-off once Ethan Happ steps out the door, even as good and productive as he's been.
So there you go. Jim Polzin of the State Journal joining us for a couple of minutes on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Schneider, hiring drivers right now. You work hard, they treat you fair. 80-plus years, they've been getting it done. Call them, 844-PRIDE. Or go to SchneiderJobs.com. That is SchneiderJobs.com. When we come back, going to close things out, wrap it all up. Next to the Bill Michaels Show.
16 stations strong. The Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
I'm a god.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together.
You're God.
Whoa, I don't play defense.
I'm a god. I'm not the god.
Bronson Koenig ties it up.
It's Czechoslovakia. It's like going into Wisconsin.
Oh, my.
Well, I got the kicked out of me in Wisconsin once. Forget it.
Koenig.
What an incredible Cinderella story. This unknown comes out of nowhere.
Who has hit some big shots in his Wisconsin career.
For this young Cinderella.
Just ties this baby at 63.
Cinderella boy.
Wow.
This crowd has gone deadly silent.
Two to go.
Cinderella story.
Trip to the Sweet 16.
It looks like a miracle.
Katie's got it. Rises up. The shot. And it's good.
It's in the hole.
It's good.
The cannonball.
Wisconsin.
Choose his eyes, I guess.
Has won it.
Hysteria.
On your deathbed, you will receive total consciousness.
So I got that going, which is nice.
Welcome back to the program. About ready to get out of here. I want to say thanks to our friends at Dwayne's Covered All. Dwayne and his buddy Gus, trusty sidekick dog up there. Wisconsin's best canvas and upholstery and boat cover provider. Hands down. Thanks to them for being a part of the program. Follow them on Facebook or just simply go to Dwayne's Cover It All, D-U-A-N-E-S, Dwayne's Cover It All. .com. That's DwaynesCoveryItAll.com. Also, our friends over at Skipper Buds, they have the spring cleaning sale going on right now. And by cleaning, they're trying to get rid of the boats from last year to bring in the boats for this year. So check out Todd and the whole crew out there at Skipper Buds. The one in Pewaukee is the one I go to. You can go to SkipperBuds.com and check it out for yourself. But head out and tell them I said hi. That is SkipperBuds.com as well. Yale was not able to come back. Yale ended up losing that ballgame 79-74. The number 3 LSU Tigers, they survive, they advance. Number 14 Yale, they are no more. They have come to an end when it comes to their tournament run. Meanwhile, the first game was the first upset. Number 7 Louisville falling by 10 to number 10 Minnesota. The Golden Gophers out of the Big Ten, they advance to live and fight another day. By the way, Rick Pitino's son maybe giving a little revenge. A little taste of revenge anyway to Louisville, the team that fired his dad. Meanwhile, 48-40 right now, Bruce Pearl's Auburn Tigers, the number 5 seed, beating the New Mexico State Cowboys right now. 48-40, that's the 12 seed. And Vermont and Florida State, the 13 seed Vermont, the 4 seed Florida State, tied at half at 27 apiece. Coming up here in just a short bit, Bradley gets underway, the 15 seed against the 2 seed Michigan State Spartans. And don't forget, coming up later on today, you got Murray State, the Racers, taking on Marquette. That's a 3:30 tip time. We'll see you tonight down at Major Goolsby, 6 to 7 tonight, the Milwaukee Basketball Hour, featuring Eric Bledsoe tonight as our special guest. We'll check out some March Madness. Steve Novak's going to be there. Until then, have a good one. See you.
Everywhere in Wisconsin, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.